Broadcasting.
Good afternoon. I'm opening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue. It's Wednesday, May 12th. Before we start our agenda, will you please call the roll?
That much is.
Representative Levy.
Present by video.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh is here by video.
Representative Smith.
Representative Smith is present by telephone.
Representative Badarama.
Excused.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham is present by video.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke present by video.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson present by video. Thank you. So for everyone participating or listening in today, we're going to do the agenda in a little bit different order. First, I want to let you know that House Bill 2781, we will not be considering that today. There will be no work on House Bill 2781. We will schedule it for another day. We will first take up House Bill 2330A. That was at the agenda of the at the end of the posted agenda. And then after we do that work session, we will go back to the beginning and start on the others. So I'm opening a work session on House Bill 2330A. LRO, could you please remind us of this bill?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this bill came from House Education Committee, and we also heard testimonies on April 27th. All in favor. And what the bill does is it makes small high school grant and formula revenue funding for certain foreign exchange students permanent. And also it makes the definition of a small high school consistent throughout the statutes.
Thank you. And do we have any amendments that were necessary for 2330?
No, Madam Chair. And we have fiscal statements and revenue statements on all this.
Good. Okay. Committee, do you have any questions for LRO or any discussion on this bill? Representative Reschke?
Yes, Madam Chair, I move that House Bill 2330A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Reschke moves House Bill 2330A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on this bill? Representative Reschke?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just appreciate moving this forward. It includes a little fix for the small high school funding. Small school district funding to move the ADMW from 8,500 to, I believe, 9,500. And that will align with the small school district, small high school funding, which is also set at 9,500. So this just kind of cleans up a little work that I did back in 2019. I appreciate the chair's indulgence for moving this bill that way. Thank you.
Any other discussion? I'm not seeing any. Let's have a roll call vote.
Representative Levy.
Levy votes yes.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh votes yes.
Representative Smith.
Smith votes aye.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham votes yes.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke votes aye.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson votes aye. Motion passes. This bill is on the way to the floor. The first chief sponsor listed on the bill is Representative Bonham, so I'm assigning Bonham to carry the bill in the House. Any other details on this before I close this work session? Okay, I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2330. Now let's go back to the top of the agenda. We're starting work sessions on bills for which we've already had a first public hearing. This work session is for the purpose, all of these next work sessions are the purpose of the committee getting to understand the bill better, talking about pros and cons, concerns, stuff you like or don't like about the bill. This is your time for discussion. I'm opening a work session on House Bill 2440.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Kyle Easton, Legislative Revenue Office. And yes, Madam Chair, the House Bill 2440, the committee heard this on last week, May 3rd, and it's one of the 11 tax credits that's up for the sunset review this legislative session. In this case, this is the Working Family Household and Dependent Care Credit. And again, it's just moving that sunset date from January 1st, 2022, 6 years later to January 1st, 2028.
Thank you. And we had a good presentation. I'm looking at some slides that we had available from LRO, about 9 or 10 slides. Committee, any questions for LRO or discussion about House Bill 2440? Any indication of whether you think this is worthy of being continued as a tax credit? Representative Pham.
Excuse me, sorry about that. Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I do want to express my support for this tax credit for working families dependent care. I know my predecessor, former Representative Alyssa Kenny Geyer, was a strong advocate for this as an anti-poverty tool to help families get the support they need. And I understand that there has been more testimony submitted since we last had this public hearing. I know there were some concerns earlier, but I appreciate that a range of nonprofits from Family Forward to the Oregon Law Center, as well as Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon, have submitted testimony about the importance of this bill for working families.
Great. And Representative Pham, I just want to clarify, when you mentioned some concerns before, I believe it wasn't I believe what we're talking about here is concerns about the lack of testimony, not concerns about the way the tax credit is constructed.
Yes, that's what I meant to say. Thank you for clarifying, Representative Chair Nathanson.
Just wanted to be real sure. Any other discussion? As I close the work sessions on these bills, please understand that most or all of these would be very likely to be scheduled for another day to actually work and move out of committee. Okay, I'm not seeing any other hands, so I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2440. I'm opening a work session on House Bill 2721.
Yes, Madam Chair, House Bill 2721 is also related to the Working Family Household Dependent Care Credit. And in this case, 2721 is What the measure would do is, in many ways, it would be expanding the credit or proposal to expand the credit, primarily focused on expanding that credit for students with limited income and how they would qualify. So the bill does that in a few different ways to try to work within the limitations that are in current law and modifying those to focus credit applicability and ability of taxpayers to qualify for the credit when they are a student. And primarily this is going to be for students of more modest means as well that would feel the benefit of the changes here in 2721.
Thank you. Committee, any questions or discussion on 2721? I'm not seeing any. Is there?
Chair Nathanson, this is Pam Marsh.
Hi, Rep Marsh.
There you are. Hand is in a different spot. I was trying to quickly look through the postings to see if we had current fiscal and revenues for this bill. Can someone just point them out to me?
Representative Marsh, we do not have, we have fiscal and revenue lights for these two. So they are statements with further analysis needed. And again, the proposal in 2721, the way it's crafted right now, it is a two-year with one of those years being a retroactive change as well. Mm-hmm. But there is notice that there could be a potential fiscal impact on the Department of Revenue. And the revenue impact, we would continue to look at. Our expectation would be in the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures.
Okay. Clearly, we have to look at this in context in terms of other tax credits and the entire tax credit budget. So that will be important data.
Thanks, Rep. Marsh, for that comment, because that reminds everyone on the committee that each one of these we look at carefully for how each one operates individually, but then looking at it as a whole for the impact on the state revenue. Yeah. Anything else on House Bill 2721? I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2721, opening a work session on House Bill 2441.
Okay, Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2441. This is another of the tax credits that's up for their sunset review process. This one, House Bill 2441 relates to the underlying credit of the University Venture Development Funds and the contributions made to those, the credit that's available for those contributions. And again, the committee heard this last week on May the 3rd, but again, the underlying change in 2441 is simply a six-year sunset extension from 2022 to 2028.
Okay. Mr. Easton, did you happen to run across any additional information? There were a few questions raised at the last meeting at the public hearing about how frequently this is used, how many businesses have benefited from this type of investment, whether the investments are exclusively part of the export economy. In other words, just we were looking for information more about what is this paying for? What are we funding? And if you don't have any additional information, there may be someone with us in the room today who could provide some information.
Yes, Madam Chair. I believe we do have a representative from the University of Oregon that could probably speak more to, certainly for their university at least, of how these funds are used and what sort of commercialization projects within the university that they're used to support. There is some information in the credit report excerpt that's in the meeting materials. Again, the use by corporations is seldom used, so this is personal income taxpayers that are generally claiming this, but it is generally a small amount. By usually it's around 70 taxpayers on average, but even that can fluctuate a bit in certain years.
Thank you. At this time, I'd like to invite anyone who's in the room, apparently someone from the University of Oregon. I don't know if there's someone from another university or two as well. If you're here, you can turn on your camera and your microphone now, and please identify yourself.
Madam Chairman and esteemed representatives, my name is Charles Williams. I'm the Associate Vice President for Innovation at the University of Oregon, and I would be happy to answer any questions about the University Venture Development Fund and, in particular, our practice at the University of Oregon.
Well, I think you should just tell us a little bit more about it so we understand how this money is used. We're all very careful about tax expenditures and making sure that that we're getting the value out of these investments. So how is the money used?
The venture fund money is used to give grants both for translational projects within the universities or translational research and prototypes. That's used for experiential education in entrepreneurship for our students and faculty. And then it's also awarded in grant agreements to our research spinouts. So those companies that have begun with the basis of their business as university research technology that they are going to commit to and go on to further develop. We've had about 100 new companies launched across the Oregon universities, over $150 million in funding that those companies have raised based on their success, in excess of 350 jobs, and launched over 20 products. There's been, I think, a very good reception, and we've, of course, had the program going for a little while. At the University of Oregon, you may be familiar with InVivo Biosystems, which used to be called Nemometrics. So those funny little worms that do drug discovery and also zebrafish as a model for doing drug discovery. You may also have heard of Defunkify. The business Dune Sciences runs that brand as a green and sustainable detergent. They've got a number of other products in the pipeline. So you may have actually seen them on the shelf at local supermarkets.
Actually, I see it on the shelf in my laundry room. You probably weren't with us for the public hearing, but I mentioned I actually own the product.
Right. Yes. And so we've I've had some good luck. We've made at the University of Oregon, we're at this point granting about 5 translational research awards. In general, 2 to 3 companies are launched with UVDF backing behind them. So it's been a real important source of financial resources for us to be able to get these companies off the ground. And there really aren't other resources available this far upstream in the innovation ecosystem. So it's been a key program for us from its inception.
Thank you. I really appreciate bringing us some information about the number of companies launched, number of jobs, number of products. Those are products that are sold not just within Oregon, I assume?
Those are traded sector products and services, yes.
Okay, thank you. Representative Marsh. Committee members, any questions for Mr. Williams? Thank you for being with us. That was helpful.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Committee members, any other questions, comments, or conversation about House Bill 2441, University Venture Development Fund? I'm not seeing any right now. Okay, I'll close the work session on House Bill 2441. Opening a work session on House Bill 2442.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2442. Again, this is another one of your tax credits that are up for sunset review this legislative session. In this case, it is the tax credit available for severe disability. So this is for taxpayers that meet the qualifications of the severe disability, and they would receive an additional personal exemption credit if they do qualify. We do have a dash one amendment in this case. Just as a reminder for the committee from last week's discussion, there was an error. Well, I shouldn't say it was an error, but in terms of the extension for the sunset, the introduced version extends the sunset only 4 years, whereas the dash one amendment would give it that standard 6-year extension. So instead of 2026, it would be extended to 2028 along with the other 10 credits that are up for proposal. So it fits in with that standard six-year extension. But again, that's in the dash one amendment.
Great, thank you. So if we consider this, we would also consider adopting a dash one amendment. Questions or discussion? I'm going to start going a little faster now. Oh, Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you remind me what bill we're on? I just stepped back into the room, so
yes. Welcome back. We're on House Bill 2442.
Okay, thank you very much.
Any questions or conversation on 2442? I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2442. Opening a work session on House Bill 2444.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2044 is another of the 6-year sunset extensions for the tax credits up for tax credit review. In this case, this credit is for the child with a disability. So taxpayers that have a child that meet the definition of disability would also receive an additional personal exemption credit. So it's very similar to the previous bill you just heard in terms of amount, but this one's focused on a child that meets the definition of disability. And again, in this case, we don't have any amendments. It is just that 6-year sunset extension.
Thank you. Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Easton, on this one, if I recall correctly, this is means tested at income of less than $100,000 for both joint and single filers. So there's not a breakdown for joint filers being at, say, $200,000 and single filers at $100,000. It just, if you have a disabled child, then if your income's under $100,000, joint or single, you can qualify for this. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct, Representative Reschke.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Anything else on this one? I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2444, opening a work session on House Bill 2445.
Madam Chair, House Bill 2445 was provided in an express sunset for the exemption of medical marijuana. This was one that I believe you heard last week as well, where we had the implications of the implicit sunset. And in this case, we'd be providing a explicit sunset in House Bill 2445.
Okay. Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Easton, is there a revenue impact for this yet, or are we still waiting on that?
I'm going to jump in here. This is actually Mazin's, so I'm not sure where Mazin is.
Gotcha.
So there, the Department of Revenue had provided in their tax expenditure report an initial estimate on the cost of extending the tax expenditure. And this is one that has the implicit sunset. So that's why the language around the bill looks a bit different. It actually creates, it goes from the starting point that it assumes that this is a tax expenditure based on that issue that we've talked about with the automatic sunset, and then takes it out of the implicit sunset category, creates an explicit sunset. And then within that, there would be the cost of extending that sunset. And I believe it was, might have been on the order of $20 million or so. But this does get wrapped up in that idea of, is it a tax expenditure or is it not a tax expenditure?
Thank you.
I'm looking that up right now in the tax expenditure report.
Yeah.
Yeah, the cost to extend, DOR had put that at $28.8 million for 21-23. And this is a little bit different from the income tax ones, where because it's basically a sales tax and the sunset is at the end of the year. And this one is all, those kinds of taxes are almost a little more intuitive in terms of kind of a flow of money throughout the biennium. Whereas if you've noticed with a lot of the income tax expenditures, the first year cost is about half of the subsequent biennium because it's one of 2 years. And the marijuana one, again, agreeing with the idea that it is a tax expenditure, it's sunsetting 6 months into it. And so I think the $28 million is a larger number for that reason, as opposed to being half, if that made sense.
It did. Just real quick, do you still have the page number that you were on when you're reading that so I can make a quick note? Or I'm sure I can look it up, but I just thought you were there, so I'd ask.
It's on page 8 in the tax expenditure.
Oh, well, okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Yes, Rep. Pham. Rep. Pham?
Second time today. Thank you, Chair Nathanson. I did have a question in response to the fiscal impact. I thought that it was, in my notes, I have $4.5 million this biennium and $6.3 million in future bienniums. Do you know is that a misunderstanding or just a partial capture of the impact, the fiscal impact?
Rep. Pham, I'll have to do a little bit of digging. Or check with Mazet on that. I'm just reading from the tax expenditure report. I'm not sure where those numbers are from.
Okay. Well, we can confirm that later. And then could you also tell me what the explicit sunset date is?
In the bill?
January 1, 2028.
And Rep. Pham, I have a copy of a page 398. I don't know if that's the most recent report, and I don't know where this page came from, but I have a copy of a page 398 if that's something that you're looking at.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I took notes during the public hearing on House Bill 2445. Admittedly, there could have been a misunderstanding, but I wrote down $4.5 million this biennium and $6.3 million in future bienniums for House Bill 2445.
Madam Chair, if I could.
Yes.
So yeah, Rep. Pham, I'll touch base with you offline and figure that out. But the page that Chair Nathanson just referred to is the main tax expenditure page for this item, which is 16.001 in the report. And DOR lists the revenue impact as $38.7 million for 1921. And now that I'm looking at it, there's a difference between state and local. So I'm guessing that your notes are referring to some sort of distinction between state and local impacts. The numbers that I was referring to is total impact.
I see. Could you repeat that number one more time?
In the tax expenditure report, The current law cost for 1921 is $38.7 million. And for 2123, it's $10.1 million. Now, that is state and local combined. And so that represents just that partial biennium. So that $38 million is a better reflection of the biennial cost of the tax expenditure. The $10 million includes the current implicit sunset date.
Meaning it would go away. They're estimating it as if it isn't going to exist anymore.
I see.
The tax expenditure. So in other words, the medical marijuana would be subject to the retail sales tax.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
It's discussions like this that scare some people away from volunteering for a revenue committee.
I didn't know that we volunteered for the revenue committee. If that's what we did, I'm unvolunteering.
Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Chris or Kyle or somebody in LRO, I'm just looking through the report here real quick, and I don't see that I know if we have a universe of people that take this credit or this exemption. I'm just wondering if we know a population number over time. My understanding, and it may not be correct, is that medical marijuana sales have decreased over time, but that may not be true. And so I'm just wondering where this credit's going in the future now that marijuana is available retail.
I think I see Mazen that has joined us. Is that correct, Mazen? He might be better in a better position to answer that question.
Yes. Okay. Sorry for the delay. The computer was not cooperating. So those estimates, Representative Reschke, are based on the number of people that actually are exercising that option. So you go to a dispensary and you buy products, whether it's usable or it's concentrate or topicals or so on, and you present your medical marijuana card, and accordingly, you are not charged the tax that otherwise would be paid. So those are the numbers based on that exercise and practice. Yes, your statement is correct that the number of medical dispensaries per se that are only medical dispensaries are no longer as frequent or as high as they used to be, because that space or that universe have been filled by the commercial establishments. However, the patients are exercising their medical marijuana allocations through the commercial establishment. So that's where they're going, and they're getting no tax on the products that they're doing. Now, remember, a lot of these patients are taking a lot of products. Think of somebody with epilepsy or with cancer who are taking these products in a very high dosage. So because it's based on 17%, the tax is 17% of value, that amount would be actually very large in considering to the price that they would pay otherwise. So it is based on how much product is being sold as medical. That's where the tax exemption is being exercised.
Follow up, Madam Chair?
Sure.
Thank you. So Mr. Malik, I guess my question is, the number of medical marijuana card holders, is that number going up or going down, I guess? I know the dispensaries are the places where you would purchase medical marijuana exclusively is diminishing, but I'm wondering about the cardholders themselves. Are we staying the same? I'm just trying to get an understanding of where this expenditure goes in the future.
The actual medical marijuana numbers are going down because not everybody is of a severe need to purchase a lot, and there's this process of bringing you a card and so on. So if not needed so much, that's why we're seeing that reduction. In the past, the only way was to acquire marijuana is through a medical marijuana card. This is obviously not the only way anymore. So it is going down. However, the cases that utilize that medical marijuana in the amounts that are large are probably going to stabilize. So this is not going to decrease all the way to zero, but it will stabilize at a small number because of the people who actually need them as medication.
Thank you, Mr. Malik. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Anything else on House Bill 2445? I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2445. One more. Opening a work session on House Bill 2452.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2452 is one of the 11 tax credits that's up for sunset renewal. In this case, this is the physicians providing care in the veterans' home, in one of two of Oregon's veterans' home. So the committee heard about this last week on May 4th. And again, this is the standard six-year sunset extension from January 1st, 2022 to January 1st, 2028.
Great. Questions or discussion? I'm not seeing any, so I'm closing the, oh yes, Rep. Pham.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. I just wanted to say, I remember from the discussion we had during the public hearing, just some questions about why these veterans' homes as opposed to other places where veterans might get some healthcare services. Ultimately, because the impact, I think, I have in my notes, it's $10,000 to $30,000 per year because only about 15 taxpayers claim. Oh, no, I think I might be missing it. Only about 15 taxpayers claim the credit. And for them individually, it's about $10,000 to $30,000 per year. And it's about $1,800 per taxpayer, according to my notes from the last public hearing. So it's a very minor revenue impact. And so I think I am supportive of it, but I know there were some questions about just about other important healthcare areas that we might also want to be incentivizing.
Thank you for that comment, Rep. Pham. And there are a number of other ways of helping the healthcare workforce recruit and train and retain healthcare workforce. Some of it might be done through tax policy, but there are also things like education loan subsidies, loan forgiveness, and so forth. There are some other financial mechanisms that are used to help with that. And there's a rural medical provider credit also. Getting a thumbs up from one of the chairs over there. The chair in the lower right of my screen, I don't know where he appears on the public screen. Any other conversation? I'm not seeing any, so I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2452. I believe that gets us through all the items that were on our agenda this afternoon. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct, Madam Chair.
Because on the back of the agenda, there's one that wasn't ready for us, and the other one we did at the beginning of the agenda. So, committee, please feel free to let me know or talk with one of the vice chairs if there are some of these that you think are worthy of moving forward. Normally, I would plan to schedule an additional work session for these to see if we might move them out of committee. And these are the sorts of things we would move to the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures. Any other business before us today before we adjourn? Okay. Thanks, everybody. See you at the next one.
Bye-bye.
We're adjourned.